Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Ron Reich, a seasoned mentor and coach specializing in helping mission-driven experts scale from six to seven figures and beyond. Ron's journey began with a personal drive to prove himself, leading him through law school and into the world of direct response marketing. After gaining invaluable experience with industry giants like Ryan Levesque, Ron stepped out on his own, building a reputation for simplifying complex ideas and guiding clients to significant profit increases. Today, Ron is the go-to strategist for those looking to elevate their businesses to new heights, delivering step-by-step strategies that get results. I've asked Ron to join us here today to share his story and insights and how we can grow our businesses with less effort. So, Ron, thank you so much for joining us today. How you doing, man?
Thank you so much for having me. Very excited to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, it's an honor and a pleasure. I'm doing research on that before I call. Obviously, you've got quite the track record. And before we get into any kind of the marketing how-tos and what's working, what's not, how did you even first get started? I know you went to law school, but is this the family business? Were your parents into marketing and advertising and business, and you took a stint in law and then came back into the fold, or?
Interesting. Yeah, it's actually the opposite in the sense that I actually come from a family of lawyers, more or less. On my dad's side of the family, like his brother was a lawyer. Quite a few people on his side of the family are lawyers. And I ended up going to law school really because I remember my last year of college, before my senior year of college, I had this really boring job. I was working at a warehouse packing boxes. And I just said to myself, I'm just being honest. I was like, work sucks. I do not want to actually get a real job. So let me see how I can prolong this for as long as possible. And so I thought, I like studying. I'm pretty good at school. There's lawyers in my family. Maybe I'll just go to law school. And so, long story short, I ended up deciding to go to law school, mainly just to prolong getting a real job. And actually, my first couple of years of law school they were fine. It was a lot of work, but I overall liked being in that environment. And then it was actually, this is an interesting story. It was my second year of law school. I actually got into promoting, I didn't really do it very well, but I got into promoting nightclubs. I used to go out a lot at the time. This was when I was much younger than I am now, in my mid-20s. And I always like to read a lot. The long story there is that I was like, okay, how can I get more people in the nightclub? I need to learn marketing. I need to learn sales. And then, so I ended up, I would, so I went to the bookstore and I would go to the sales and marketing section of the bookstore. And I would spend hours perusing those books. And some of the books that I ended up really discovering them were by this guy named Dan Kennedy.
Who's
You
that
probably
guy?
heard of Dan Kennedy, right? Yeah, exactly. So Dan Kennedy, for those who don't know, legendary marketer who's really been a huge influence on the entire direct response marketing industry. And so the very long story short, as you might, so it sounds like once you get into Dan's world, you just become very consumed by it. He really is good at getting you to like sign up for his newsletter, sign up for his courses and whatnot. He has more books. So anyways, I think the first book of his I bought was, I think it was No BS Sales Success, because I was looking for some tips on how to promote nightclubs. And then from getting into Dan's world, that's when he really turned me on to this idea of information marketing. This was back in 2004, 2005. So this is before like online marketing or internet marketing it was really a thing. The idea was information marketing. This was like selling information. So I was like, well, that sounds pretty cool. And so pretty much for my last couple of years of law school, I got really consumed with this idea of information marketing and wanting to make money running my own business in some way or another. And so honestly, for that first, it was for my first couple, or I'm sorry, my last 2 years of law school, I spent really a lot of time just consuming information, to be honest. But I was thinking, oh, this is cool. And at the time, I was thinking, oh, maybe what I'll do is I'll become a lawyer and then I'll build up like a successful law practice and then I'll teach people how to build a successful law practice. I'll package that information. That was like the Dan Kennedy
The
blueprint.
model,
And so that was a thought I had. And then what I ended up doing was after, so I ended up graduating law school and I graduated in California. In California, you take the bar exam in July. Yeah, you take it in July and you don't get your results until November. So you have like this 4 months where you're just waiting around,
questioning
twiddling your
all your life
thumbs.
decisions.
Exactly. Yes. There's nothing to do. And so it's during those 4 months where I wasn't working at the time. I had literally nothing to do other than wait for my bar results. That's when I decided to launch my first information marketing program, which ended up being a course on how to basically on how to do good in law school. Because at the time I was taught, you want to talk about, write what you know about. And so I ended up, that was like my first program. Then I later on had another program called, it was called Conquer the Bar, How to Pass the Bar Exam, or at least after I passed the bar exam. And then I ended up getting my first lawyer job in early 2007. And so that was 2006 when I was getting my bar results. So in 2007 is when I started working as a lawyer, but I had my lawyer job, but from the very beginning, I really knew that I was not long to be a lawyer. I knew that I ultimately wanted to become an information marketer or whatever it was called back in the day. And so essentially for those next 2 years, I ended up really moonlighting as an information marketer. I would get home from school, I'm sorry, it seemed like school. I'd get home from work and then I would work on my online marketing business, my information marketing business. And I did that for a couple of years. And to be honest, that first project, it didn't really do really, it didn't make enough money. It did okay for a little while, but it didn't make enough money for me to quit my job. I was maybe making an extra $1,000 or $2,000 a month at its peak. So I'm not maybe,
Right.
not, I wasn't breaking any records with that. But I ended up actually partnering with somebody, because I'd spent a couple of years really becoming a good marketer, learning marketing. I don't know how good I was per se at the time. But one of my friends at the time, who I was connected with, he was like a dating expert, and so we ended up partnering up together. I haven't actually told this story before. I actually ended up partnering with two people. I partnered with one person he was really big in the world of martial arts. Essentially, he was pretty well known in that world. He had a big following in that world, and I partnered with him, and we did a project together. And at the same time, in parallel, I partnered with my friend who is a dating expert. And it ended up being that the dating expert, that's the one that really took off. And where he was the behind I was the behind the scenes person, and he was the front facing expert. And really that was I ended up working as that behind the scenes person. And we had my first successful launch. It did about $150,000 in revenue. And that kind of gave me some good momentum. And I wasn't quite ready to quit my job yet. But then about a year later, I actually was able to quit my job and do the marketing thing full time. And for the first 8 years, I was just that behind the scenes person. And then I later on transitioned to helping entrepreneurs grow their business as I'm doing
Yeah.
now.
Yeah, I have a similar story. In fact, a few of us, when I was living in California, we were gonna launch our own conference called the Kingmakers, because we were always the guys behind the scenes. We were the
Oh,
mechanic,
yeah.
making sure
Yeah,
everything worked,
yeah, yeah.
and these people get all the accolades and that. So I know how that.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was just a linear journey. Let me ask this. It's a bit of a rhetorical question, but you just step one, step two, step three, suddenly 150,000, and now it's raining money, you're quitting your job, and it's all sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah, for sure. Now I have to be honest. I know I understand the question that you're saying. I actually was pretty lucky in the sense that once I got to the dating business, I guess it's funny how Steve Jobs has that quote that you can only connect the dots like in
Yeah, looking
hindsight,
backwards.
right?
Yeah,
Like
yeah.
looking backwards. And it's funny, I haven't really thought about this, but so essentially like I spent about a year. I guess maybe I didn't have a lot of pressure because I was working as a lawyer as normal, but like the law school, the law stuff, like that first year, I basically did that business for 2 years. And really the peak time is like the summertime. The first product that I launched was the How to Pass the Bar Exam product. That didn't do really that well. It was hard to find advertise. It didn't do great for whatever reason. But the one that did really well was my How to Pass the Bar Exam product. I had one summer where that program did. Why it was like at the time it was amazing. I sold like this course for $150. It was $149, and I was selling off of Google Ads. And I think I was pretty much selling it. This would have been 2000, I guess 2006, where 2006, 2007, where literally I could just send it. It was like Google Ad directly to a sales page. It was
Yeah,
just it was it
when you
was
could
it
do
was, it
that
was
kind of
it,
thing. Yeah,
yeah,
back in the day.
exhaustive. And I was just like, it was great. I was like making like every couple of days, I would make $150,000 sale. It was awesome. There's probably things I could have done differently
Sure.
in hindsight, but anyways, that was pretty cool.
Developing the
And
skill. Yeah.
yeah, exactly. And I was like, okay, this is cool. Then I tried to do other things to grow that business and scale that business. But then the next summer, I didn't do any sales, a lot of this, and then it became apparent that the market just wasn't big enough for me to really make some good income. So then that's when I ended up getting involved in going in like that, the dating market and the martial arts market. And I remember I once did this, I had this one launch I did for the martial arts while I was partnering with my, and this guy, he had a big list. He had a really big following. We did this one. I thought I was going to make $1 million from this promotion. And it's just, we launched it. We did it. We launched it. And it was total cricket. So I didn't really think about this at the time, but that would have been like my first kind of failure, if that makes sense. And then, but then the interesting thing, I guess I will tell you of interesting stories. My first successful launch was then actually the one with the
The
dating
dating,
market. That
right.
was it. That was how we actually launched this. It was actually quite innovative at the time. We ended up launching like this year-long $5,000 coaching program, and we sold it for $397 a month. And I made my really big mistake was, so I was working with my partner, and I asked him to, we were flying by the seat of our pants. And long story short, I asked him to, I was like, okay, could you set up, I need you to set up the merchant account. And so he ended up, if you, so at the time there was, if I remember this correctly, there was, you would need authorized.net. You need an
Right.
authorized.net. That's like the gateway. That's like essentially how you process the orders. And then you also need an actual merchant account
Right.
to like connect, to actually collect the money
Yeah.
essentially. And so long story short, I asked my friend, my partner to set that up. And anyway, so what he did was he ended up,
Connecting his own bank account?
not that, no.
Oh.
He ended up getting, we ended up getting an authorized.net account, which I set that up or he set that up. And then like we tested it. I was like, oh, it was working. But I didn't even know this because it's beginner's ignorance. We didn't actually have a merchant account. So what ended up happening was, so this first ever launch, it was actually really successful because there's some good pent-up demand for, and this was back in 2008, late 2008. There was like some pent-up demand, and we were actually using some pretty, it was like a kind of a Jeff Walker type product launch formula type thing. So we were using some pretty sophisticated marketing at the time compared to what other people are used to. Long story short, we ended up launching this program, which is $397 a month with a teleseminar. This was before webinars. This is what we did with a teleseminar. And we also had our PayPal account set up. So we also, it was a one shopping cart account. We had one shopping, we cop shopping cart, and we
Way
also had
back in time
PayPal.
now, one shopping cart.
Yeah, totally. And anyways, long story short, we did this webinar, this teleseminar, and it was like, we felt, I can't remember how many people were on. It was like a decent amount. It was like maybe 200 people on. And then we were like, oh, this is like awesome. And then long story short, we looked into the bank account, and there's all of these $397 orders that were all declined, or they were all like not going through because we didn't have a
Right,
merchant
which
account.
account?
So this was like, this was really painful. And the other thing that happened is we did have the PayPal orders actually did go through because we had a PayPal account. And I think we were charging, it was like $4,000 pay in full or $397 a month. And a long story short, we did about 50 grand, like immediately at 50 grand through PayPal. But about a week or two, no, not a week, a couple of days after the promotion, we got an email from PayPal that said, yeah, we're not going to give you access to this money because it's like
Yeah, they
suspicious
froze it.
charges. So they ended up freezing that money for 6 months, no doubt, 6 months. And we were able to get back some of the, we were to recover some of the people who tried to pay the first time, but we didn't recover all of them. So really what
Yeah.
ended up being a $150,000 launch
Would have been a lot.
eventually would have been like at least a 250, 300,000 launch. So that was my, it's funny. Even at the time, I remember I was like annoyed about it, but I wasn't like,
You weren't
I don't know.
mad.
I wasn't like devastated. You know what I mean? I wasn't
Yeah.
as like, if that happened to me today, I would probably be more, I guess
Right.
I didn't have a wife and child to care. You know, the stakes were a lot lower then. And so just to, so we ended up doing that. And then it was actually really, the thing that was really interesting is that for the first, I'm not joking. So we did that launch, and really for the next year or so in that business, everything we did, it like worked. Like we
Worked.
launched like a membership site, and that did quite well. We did like this other launch that did quite well. And so where you're thinking, oh man, I got magical powers. Nothing's
Yeah,
gonna,
the golden touch. There, that's what
yeah,
they
I got the
call
magic
kind of.
touch. And
I've
then,
been there.
again, yeah, we've all been there. And then, then inevitably we have something that didn't work as well. And then, yeah, we did that. Yeah, I think that business grew pretty consistently for about the next, I think it would have been like 2008, 2009, 2010. Yeah, 2000, it grew like pretty good for the next 4 years. Then it went back down, and then I had to rebuild. Then the roller coaster
Right,
begins. But yeah,
right.
to answer your question, yeah, it definitely was not that linear straight line.
I love that. So a couple of key lessons for people that didn't read between the lines was, one, it can take up to 8 launches to figure out what you're doing and hit pay dirt.
Yeah.
And two, there's a difference between a lead and a buyer, and there's the difference between someone wanting to buy and actually collecting the money. And those are each
Yeah,
important
for sure.
hurdles that you like. It's a definitive, it's like a step on a staircase. You got someone that
Yeah.
want, they say, I'm in, I'll pay, and then actually
For
getting that
sure.
payment, and then even
Getting
after you
the
process it,
money.
getting it. Who
Yeah,
is the
that's the
merchant?
real. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah, for
Bitcoin
sure.
and Cardano, people. Bitcoin
Yeah. But yeah, it's totally true. The thing is, I didn't really, in hindsight, I didn't really know my own ignorance. Like the thing is, it's like, the thing I would tell everybody, the thing I tell my clients, I tell my students is it's all just about, no matter what, it's all just about moving forward. No
and Cardano.
matter what happens, everything that happens is good. You either have a promotion or a campaign that works and you make money, that's awesome. If it doesn't work, okay, that's awesome, because that gives you data that shows you, that helps you modify your marketing message, whatever it takes. It's gonna lead you to the gold eventually. And a lot of times people, like even myself these days, we need a lot more like mindset type stuff to recover from those failures. But at the time, I was like, oh, whatever.
Keep
Just
moving
keep going.
forward.
It was, yeah, so that was
That
good.
served you so well. That's a great, just keep moving forward. Everything that happens is good. And I think it's good to tell people that it can take up to 8 product launches. Now, what would you recommend to someone that's starting out and struggling? Let's say somebody did something. There's a whole, you got to have an audience before you can pitch a product, but there's a lot of people with audiences that can't monetize them. There's a lot of people that are pitching products that nobody wants. They got the audience, they got the promotion, but the offer sucks. What would you recommend to someone starting out or struggling? How do they navigate through this?
So this is the thing, is that you mentioned this as you were asking the question. It's all about, again, this is the thing you'll learn in marketing and direct marketing 101. It's all about having the right offer to the right audience. This is step zero, step one, step two, step three to having a successful business. And so essentially, if you're just starting out and if you're struggling, your only goal is to get an offer that works. That is your only goal. Okay, so how do you, then this is the thing where it's a little bit circular. How do you get an offer that works? The way you get an offer that works is to get an offer that works, right? That's what you need to do. So what I really mean, that's the tongue-in-cheek way of saying it, but the way you actually get an offer that works is, again, to what we were talking about, you have to experiment. You have to ask the market. You have to put things in front of the market. And then eventually that's how you find out what works. Okay, so now I definitely appreciate that there are people who teach this, and I have some things I teach on this as well. We're doing things like market research, for example, doing interviews with our clients and prospective clients, sending out, you mentioned Ryan Levesque, sending out surveys to get data on what people want. Doing those things is cool. If you're pivoting, or if it's a new offer, or if it's a new project, or if you're pivoting, or if you're just looking to tighten up, optimize, rejig your marketing message, spending a week or two doing market research and doing that kind of stuff is really cool. But the thing that's really going to allow you to get an offer that works is by putting things out into the marketplace. So that's why I remember when I first started out coaching, when I first started out doing consulting, after I stopped being the behind the scenes person, I just got on calls with a lot of people, and I would just try to, I would offer them different things. Sometimes I would offer them, depending on who I was talking to, or honestly, yes, depending on who I was talking to, I would, if somebody was looking for business growth, I would be, yeah, I'm here's my business growth framework. You can join my business growth coaching program. If somebody wanted to do a launch, then I would offer them like a launch package, essentially. If somebody wanted like funnel optimization, I would offer them funnel optimization co coaching, essentially. So like, and I would just offer different things. And eventually, what ended up being the thing that people wanted for me was the launch thing. People really wanted to know because I'd worked behind the scenes on some bigger launches. I knew like how the whole process worked. I had launched quite a few of my own successful products. So I ended up really for my first year, I ended up becoming a launch, like a launch consultant, essentially. That's basically what I did. At the beginning of that year, to give you an idea, this is when I first started doing coaching consulting. This was early 2017. At the beginning of early 2017, my goal was to become a was to be a productivity coach. And I ended up that year being a launch consultant because that's what the market wanted. So the point I'm getting at is that what you want to do is the specific thing you want to do is you do the market research, but then you want to put out, you want to give people the chance to consume your message, to consume your offer. So that's why asking them things like, I'm thinking about doing the XYZ. Are you interested? Emailing reply back or comment below. Those kinds of things are good. Then also just to be honest, offering those things. Ideally, you know, get on sales calls with people. When you're offering sales calls, have that same conversation. Or okay, you could even do market research calls. They're getting ahead of myself. Hey, I'm thinking about doing this kind of program that's going to help you do everything. Would that be of interest to you? If enough people say yes, okay, then you might have some potential there. And then offer that to the marketplace. But again, it's not, unfortunately, this is the thing that I know you'll appreciate because you have been an entrepreneur for many years, is that it's not linear. There are people, and again, I sell courses, I have courses myself that have frameworks and things like that. But the point I'm getting is that you can go through somebody's course on how to create an offer, on how to launch your program. You could do everything that they tell you to do exactly perfectly. And it might not work perfectly the first time, just because we like to say the smartest marketers in the world, they're wrong 50% of the time. The only people who know what's really gonna work is the market. So that's why really it's all about, somebody said a while ago, I can't remember where this come from, like the biggest advantage you could have in business is being able to execute faster. So really it's all about the faster you can execute and put more messages out there, the faster you're gonna get results. But I would, and just to be clear, I don't want to, this is where there's the nuance of, you don't want to be, I don't, I you don't want to be pivoting too much. You don't want to be changing your offer too much, but really what you want to do is it's more about finding like, what is your, that massive, what's your skill set? Where are you good at? And then what's your audience that you're focusing on? You really want to focus on one main audience, ideally the audience that you already have access to. And it's all about putting different things in front of them. And then eventually it's gonna hit. The once you have the thing that hit that hits, then it's all about doubling down on that, tripling down on that. Just focus on that one offer, that one audience, really for a while until you really get some momentum with it, till you're really making some good revenue from it, until you add more offers or pivot to, I would honestly, very seldomly are you gonna pivot audiences, but really I would focus on that one offer for a while. The biggest mistake that most people make. So the biggest, are you going to say something?
I was just going to agree with you and say that what something that I feel helped me is that the path from 0 to 1 million is about learning how to consistently sell one type of solution to one specific problem to one type of person. And
Yeah,
that's
absolutely,
basically
for
what you're
sure.
saying. You pick one audience, and even like you said, you don't even necessarily need to change what you're selling so much. You might just need to change the messaging or how it's positioned.
Yeah,
Or
exactly.
because what you're saying in yours, again, to help people that aren't reading between the lines, is you had developed experience and you had expertise, but it could be presented as a launch consultant. It could be
Yeah, for
projected as a
sure.
growth consultant. It could be pitched at a lot of
Yeah,
different
for
ways, but
sure.
it's the same. I tell people a chiropractor sells one thing, a healthy spine. But to achieve that solution, they have different tactics that they use. They bend you this
Yeah,
way, they
yeah.
bend you that way. And so ultimately, if people focus on the problem and the stereotype, or maybe having to test different stereotypes, I think that's a great message. I think that's a great, and the execute faster, I think is a really good tip. You do some market research first. There's so many tools nowadays that makes it so easy to look at what your competitors are doing. And before, you'd have to have someone on a street corner and cost me like $1,000 a day collecting surveys. Now you can just go read some Amazon reviews, hop on Reddit, jump in some groups, use some AI tools, and wow, you've got at least a point, at least you got a finger in the wind, so to speak. So I think that's really great. I think that's fantastic. What are some of the greatest challenges? You talked about a launch, and I think people are often launching. What are some of the challenges? Because it almost, talking about this, it sounds, put it in terms people can understand. people are relaunching. They do a promo and it flops, and then they re-promote it in a different way and maybe it flops. What are some of the biggest challenges that people face in trying to get it to connect, to maintain enthusiasm and to keep putting it out there, getting rejected again and again? What are some of the biggest obstacles and challenges?
Yeah, definitely the biggest challenge. And so what your question is, what are the biggest challenges that people have when it comes to staying consistent and putting stuff out there?
Like either to get content, like to get something that hits, or even when it hits, to stay focused.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay. How do I answer that? So, yeah. The biggest challenge, it's almost self-defined. The biggest challenge is just staying consistent. It's staying positive when things are not working. And I guess, you know, that's the thing I would say is that it's the same answer for both questions, is that people just give up. They just give up too easily. That's the biggest challenge that I think people need to, you have to have the discipline to stay, to really stay in the game. A lot of people think that, and I work, or just a lot of people, they just think that, so many things to talk about. I think the biggest challenge that people have, and this is for all business, is that people, they think it's going to be easy. They want it to be easy. They also think that they're going to reach a point where they're in like Zen marketing land, where everything is just working and they can just chill out and everything's going to be good. Like they're going to make it at some point.
Right.
And everything's going to be good. I think the challenge is not realizing that if you've decided to play the game of being an entrepreneur, is that you're always on a roller coaster. But there's always going to be the ups and downs, because this is inevitable. Because the thing is, remember, we're all familiar. This was one of your first questions, that success, it's not a straight line. It really is spiraling up, right? If you could, that's just how it is. And the reason why that is because when you reach a new level, in order to get to the next level, you're going to have to do things you've never done before. You're going to encounter struggle. You're going to run up against your internal resistance. You also are going to have to learn new skills that you, by definition, don't have. And so, full stop, that's going to be hard. Growth always requires challenges. So if you want to keep growing, if you want to keep growing your business, you're just going to have to accept that that's part of the game. And I think that what we need to do is, as entrepreneurs, we need to really embrace the challenges. There's one of my favorite concepts is this idea of anti-fragility, which is the idea that the more challenges things get, the stronger you become. The more we can become anti-fragile, that's what really is allow us to becoming unstoppable. And realize that the thing is that realize that when you, I really learned this from one of my mentors, Brian Johnson, the book Arte is really great. Check his stuff out at Heroic. Is that when things are going bad, you have to realize that's actually a positive indicator that you're on the right track. If that makes sense. Because that means that you're growing. That means that you're getting out there.
It it's
you're
a feedback loop. Even in nature, a turtle will have something like 100 kids and only 7 make it. And so there's just a certain amount. You have to imagine there's a beast of failure that just needs a certain amount of, it just need to feed it a certain amount until it shuts up and lets you get by. But it's the same thing in basketball. If you only take 3 shots, the best you can do is 3 out of 3. But the likelihood is you're going to get 1 out of 3 at best. But if you take 50 shots, now you might get 10 shots. So it just almost, what's your appetite for punishment?
basically, it's just being aware of that and just realizing there's never going to be that point again where everything's going to be awesome. Like even one of my favorite examples of this is, you mentioned sports. If you look at the highest level, are you into sports at all? What sports are you into? Anything you follow?
If I follow any sport these days, it's probably just CrossFit. But I did jiu-jitsu at a high level. I trained with Olympic athletes and like the Mendes Brothers. I did a lot of training camps. So I would say Brazilian jiu-jitsu, MMA, lately these days, CrossFit. So focused on my missions to change the world. I just keep my ear to the ground on what's going on. But
I just got back into training Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I'm a super very white belt. How long did you do BJJ for? Do you still do it?
I did about 6-7 years. I got my blue belt at Hicks and Gracie School in Japan. And then after training in Japan for 2 years, I went back to Canada. And that was one of my first businesses, was my jiu-jitsu school. Because there's not really a lot of options in my town, and I ran a
Oh,
rec club,
nice.
and I went turned the free club into a paid club, and that's where I really cut my teeth on learning how to market and sell. And I realized that it was the marketing and selling that was going to get more students into my gym, because I could do the best job with retention that I you know possible, and that's always you always have to obsess it. Like it's almost a given. Anybody that's really in the game, they know they need to play long term games with long term people. You have to obsess over retention. But that said, if you only have 10 students, the best you're gonna have, like they're gonna die, move away, get married, have a kid, like things are gonna happen. So you really have to have the marketing and sales engine to keep bringing in new blood. That's where I really cut my teeth. And I ran that gym for about 3.5 years. And I
Oh,
did
nice.
training camps with the Mendez brothers. I had UFC champs come through. And yeah, so so why? What was the sports analogy?
Yeah, no, just one of my favorite examples. If you look at the best athletes ever, the best, most successful athletes ever, they have had really bad games, for example. If you look at, there's Tom Brady. A lot of people say he's like the best football player ever. He's done a lot better than he's won most of his games, but he's had some playoff games where
Oh,
he's
yeah.
had really bad games where he's thrown five interceptions. Like Michael Jordan, he's lost really big games. Most people know that he's made the most winning shots ever of all the basketball players. Who has missed the most game-winning shots ever? That is
Yep.
right, Michael Jordan.
That's right.
And yeah, it's that same kind of thing. It's that
Yeah.
even you just have to, even the best of the best never are not
Never.
undefeated.
Oh, 100%. If CrossFit, just because I brought it up, the winningest guy in CrossFit now is Matt Frazier. And he did 10 years at the Olympic Training Center for Olympic weightlifting, had nothing spectacular of a career, ended up breaking his back in two places. And then after recovering from that, not giving up, taking some time off, sure, but he ended up coming back and then became the win. He took second 2 years in a row. And then he just got upset that he won second the second year because he felt like he was screwed. And he realized all the untucked corners that he had, the little details. And he started obsessing about marginal improvements. And then he basically won everything he touched for 5 years until he just retired, knowing that the experience he had before and wanting to not ride the bus till the wheels fall off.
For sure.
And I mean, the guy broke his back in two places, right? It's probably a bit of an obstacle for some people. He even talked about one that in the warm-up on one, he popped some tendon in his leg, and his mom was a nurse, and he asked his mom, and his mom's, "You're fine, just put some tape on it." And he went out, competed, and won. And when she came back, she's like, "We got to get you to the hospital. Like, you messed your leg up." So she still sent her own son out there with a wobbly leg without a tendon to support it. And that's the reality. That's the
Yeah,
people don't
just
get it.
like
You know,
I think
people watch
even
too many
the
movies.
and even just like CrossFit, it's the same for all sports, but CrossFit as a whole, right? Is that, have you read that book, Chasing Excellence?
I haven't finished it. Yeah.
Okay. And anyways, that's one of my favorite books on the topic of mental toughness, etc. But anyways, what I was getting is that even if you look at just the idea of training for CrossFit, like the best CrossFit athletes, 99% of their existence is just like pain all the time, right? Because they're
Right.
just training so hard in order to get to, in order to get to that level. There's no way that you can, so there's failure in the sense of muscular failure.
Right. And knowing when to take risks. For example, if you're on a rowing machine or exercise bike, go for broke. Like the likelihood that you're gonna injure something catastrophic on a bike isn't there. So it's just about how deep into that dark place can you go, because your body adapts to what you test it with. Whereas if you're gonna be trying to back squat 700 pounds, make sure that you do that on a proper day. So a lot of it is judgment and decision making as well. And timing is a huge part of everything that a lot of people don't realize. I had this thought. I put it in my email newsletter maybe 4 or 5 months ago, but I remember I was thinking, everybody's talking about immortality. It felt like that week. Like some people are talking about their immortal soul. Some people think we're going to achieve immortality with technology. Some people think we get reincarnated till we learn some lesson. But everybody's talking about some sort of immortal presence. And I thought, if I became immortal, or if I had an immortal soul, either through reincarnation or whatever, on an immortal's timeline, what would be the trophies that I put above my fireplace? What would be the prized possession? What would be the prized accomplishments? It's almost like asking that question, what would the best version of you do? And keep that in your mind. And then why not try to do that? I think, like I said, I love that you talked about anti-fragile. I think that we've become, as in the West especially, I heard this quote great that I thought, well, this quote recently I thought was good, that saying that you're peaceful when you aren't capable of violence is a lie. You're harmless. There's a big difference. Peaceful is when you have the capacity for violence and you choose not to use it. And it's the same thing with virtue. Virtue isn't, and I think that we've really, I remember I was in Africa and I got on a bus once, and it wasn't really a bus. It was like a minivan that was driving around picking people up. I spent 9 weeks in Africa years ago. And I remember that even young, old, whoever, when it was your stop, you said it was your stop and they slowed down and you jumped off while the thing was still moving.
Oh, wow.
But where I came from, there was a bus and they'd pull up.
Yeah,
it would
totally,
lower,
for sure.
And then you get on and then it would come up like the bus met you. And there's, I'm not saying that. It's just a difference in survival mentality, right? You hear about the burglar that falls on someone's roof and sues the homeowner and wins. But what is this? Why there's this, it's, you know, to quote Elon Musk, I have to admit, I do have a lot of respect for his accomplishment, this woke mind virus, where it's, we're trying to be so nice to each other that we're not being, holding ourselves accountable as individuals to do more. I think that everyone deserves an equal opportunity at the beginning. But by the time you're 40, 50, 60, 70, you can't guarantee equal outcomes, right? That's not, everyone should have access to good education. Everyone should have access to all that stuff. Everyone should have access to relatively equal starting points as best as you can in terms of what's out in the public. But beyond that, like I saw somebody advocating, this is a Jim Rohn thing. Somebody was advocating for raising minimum wage. And the idea is it's supposed to be a ladder. Like you're not supposed to spend your life at minimum wage. That's for the new people to the workforce. It's supposed to be a ladder. You're supposed to develop your skills and abilities and climb the ladder. You're not supposed to keep raising minimum wage. And I think that's part of why more and more offshoring's happened, because we're raising minimum wage Canada. I think minimum wage is something stupid, like $16, $17 an hour now. And some people might be like, yeah, but the cost of living. But raising the minimum wage just also increases the cost of living, because it doesn't change the material requirements. And there's a bigger conversation here to be had, but skills and abilities, I don't
not
know.
Yet.
It's
Yeah,
your
we're on the same
interview. I don't
page.
want to ramble
I mean,
on and on forever.
But no, it's all good. People, the thing is, there's a lot of, I think even you mentioned Jim Rohn. He basically said, if you want to learn something, go to the library. It's free. You can
free.
Go to the library and learn whatever you want. But he said that literally 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
These days, go on YouTube. You could learn anything you want by going on YouTube.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there's so, like, when, there's literally endless opportunity, I would say. Anybody, for example, I used to work with people, I'm sure there's other examples, or even there's where you're at in the Philippines, all over the world. There's a guy I used to work with who used to work with me. He was based in Colombia and he ran my Facebook ads. And I was paying him I was paying him more than minimum wage. Like I was paying him, and he figured out how to run Facebook ads. I don't know exactly. I'm sure just by, he figured it out, got some courses on YouTube or whatnot. And he was able to make pretty good money. And obviously Colombia cost of living is less than it is in the US, but he was getting paid in US dollars living in Colombia by learning a skill. So the point I'm getting at is that,
anybody
can learn anything.
And I think the biggest threat right now are the parasites. And I use that as a broad sweeping term, because not everything in the jungle kills you and eats you. Some things just feed on you. So I often say there's producers and consumers. And when you consume, it costs you time, energy, money. When I eat food, I have to stop. I have to either spend the time, energy, and money to catch what I'm hunting or to buy the food and sit down and eat. But when I'm producing things, I'm creating things that I can trade and exchange. And so right now we have so much in terms of all these social media platforms trying to hold our attention, all sorts of substances, alcohol, cigarettes, weed, whatever you want, that it's almost a battle of attrition for a certain extent. Is how focused can you be? It's like what I already said before. If you have an immortal soul, you really have to strive to achieve and do more than just pay the bills. I think in the beginning, you got to struggle to make sure you got roof and ramen. I got a roof over my head. I got food in my belly. And at that point, you need to really start trying to think of having some sort of bigger purpose, some sort of accomplished, some sort of meaningful reason for your existence. And you really have to be careful about your time, energy, and life. I'm, like I've already said, I'm a fan of Elon, but I keep deleting the Twitter app because I find I'm spending too much time on that. I turned all notifications off my phone. My phone doesn't bing, it doesn't vibrate, it doesn't ding, it doesn't nothing, because it's my tool to interact with the world. It's not there for the world to come and interrupt me and my focus and my day. And I think that those are things that are really important. And people, again, in our society, and your friends do this, and your friends have lax standards, and it just erodes the fabric. And really, all we have is our 24 hours a day to make what we want from our life. And I think that's why it's really important. And I think that's why people like things like marketing and sales, because they think, oh, I can make a lot of money. But part of that is often in an ethical business, the amount of money you make is a direct result of the number of people you've helped. Right? Typically,
yeah,
people.
Yeah. And the value that you give.
100%. And so that's why I say you really have to find a passion and a purpose and a mission. And it's good to have a trade to fall back on, something that's tried, tested. Carpentry has been here forever. Maybe it'll be replaced by a robot, but ultimately it's not happening yet. And so
no time
there's,
soon, yeah.
Yeah, there's industries, but then you really need to try to figure out, how do we help move our species forward? How do we help get more out there? You got to try and do more than just be a me too to make the most of their life. Because nobody knows for sure what's going to happen. And just avoid, beware just being plugged into something 24 hours a day and end up being just a spectator in somebody else's life. I think it's really important that you go out there and carve your own path. I think that's why we need more entrepreneurs, more business leaders. Before the free markets, before free markets, it was kings and peasants. And in COVID, we just saw the largest step back towards that in something like 1,000 years, where we've got the mega corporations, the international conglomerates, and the small businesses have been wiped out across. And this is an opportunity that we need more small business owners. We need more entrepreneurs. We need more people learning the skills that you're here to share, because we need people to go out there. And everybody can acknowledge and recognize. And that's part of why you want to avoid master planning. If there's a master planner, their plan may not include what you need. And if it's just broadly enforced, why? Like, it's all fun and games until you're under the grinding wheels. But in a small localized economy, everyone can recognize excellence. The market is unknown and unknowable, like you said. I said, how many people are in market to buy a car today? You might have, you know, keyword searches and foot traffic, but ultimately it's unknown and it's fluctuating nonstop. But everyone can recognize excellence. So if I just focus on the most excellent solution to that problem and being really loud about having the most excellent solution, and not just loud myself, but loud about the results of my clients that they're talking about and amplifying them, everyone will recognize excellence. And you'll go through ups and downs and that, sure. But I think that's the best north light you can have to guide you through.
The idea of being so good they can ignore you—that is, that's the best way to be successful. 100%.
Yeah. And to manage your time and your life—that's it. That's all we have. Michelangelo, some Da Vinci, some of these people were experts in 5, 6, 7 fields. Where's that gone? People don't have time for it because they're spending 6 hours a day watching TV and Netflix and on social media. Right? I think there's a huge opportunity there for the right people. And
yeah, absolutely, for sure. Yeah, I'm quite passionate about that. This could be a whole other podcast. Maybe we'll have to do a part two. The whole idea of, sure. I'm a big fan of all the digital minimalism type stuff. And it's insane when you think about, when you mentioned the damage that social media, push notifications, all that stuff does, is there's two parts to it. There's the actual time that you're spending doing it. Yeah, like you mentioned, I know the average person, they say, spends about 2 hours a day scrolling on social media. Mm-hmm. So there's the tangible time wasted. But there's also just what it does to your brain in the sense that, yeah, just like when you're in this distracted state, there's also this idea, and I think most people would relate to this idea of attention residue, that like when you consume something, anything, like watch a TV show, when you consume an outside input, it still is in your head for a time after that. And a great example is you watch a TV show and then you end up having a dream about that TV show or similar content. It's a thing. So the point I'm getting at is that, if you don't do those things, I would recommend everyone severely limit their social media consumption and their kind of digital input consumption. If you do that, not only do you get the time back, but you'll find that you're so much more clearer. It's hard to put into words. It's hard to explain if you haven't experienced it, but you're just so much more focused. You're going to be so much more productive. You're going to be so much more energized. So it's like exponential power, as you were alluding to.
Yeah, 100%. Can you readjust your camera? You're starting to disappear.
Sorry.
There you go. But 100%. I think that's so powerful. Ron, this has been such a value-packed call. I feel like people may want to listen to it more than once to make sure they get all the nuts, the golden nuggets out of it. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
You're awesome. I can't think of anything offhand. Is there anything I really want to mention? No, I think we talked about all the important things.
And I do have a couple of questions before we wrap up. One is, where do you see things going? We're going through a lot in terms of technology changes, geopolitical changes. What are you watching come down the pipeline that you think the audience may need to keep their eyes on over the next 3, 5, 10 years?
It's what you actually alluded to. A couple things that are coming to mind on that. So a few things are true. The idea of being so good they can't ignore you, that's always going to be true. That was true thousands of years ago. That's true now. That's going to be true in the next 5 to 10 years. So the point I'm getting at is that the cream, it's been like this for a while. The cream rises to the top in all markets. And there's always is the top percent. There always is the top 4%, the top 1% of any market that is getting the vast majority of the spoils. This is the 80-20 rule, which I know you're obviously an expert at that. And like the 80-20 of the 80-20, this is always going to be true. And it's going to get more so as the years progresses, as more people are entering into the markets. That means more people are going to be getting dissatisfied with people who don't know what they're doing. But if you do know what you're doing, if you are able to get results for your clients and deliver on your promises, that's going to put you in a really good position. The other thing that is, it's been happening for a while, it's also continuing to happen, is you mentioned kind of like fragmentation. People are getting more, there's more fragmentation. There's now we're at a point where we're getting, it's not just about having a niche, it's all being like a sub niche of a sub niche, being as targeted as possible is making a big difference. For example, when everybody goes on, you mentioned Netflix, somebody goes on Netflix or goes on Amazon or goes on YouTube, they see their feed is completely curated to their exact preferences, right?
Hyper
Like
relevance.
the only person on earth that has that's going to be seeing that feed is them, right? So the more we can figure out who is our ideal client and who is and what's this the very specific expertise problem that we're going to solve, the more we can get hyper targeted with excellence, that's I think is going to be an unstoppable combination going forward.
I love that. I love that. I think that's super important. If people have more questions, if they want to reach out, if they want to follow up, if they have want your insights, if they want you to look at something, if they need some input, what are some of the best ways for them to reach out and get in touch?
Yeah, great way to get in touch with me would just be to follow me on my personal Facebook profile. If you go find me on my on Facebook, just type in Ron Reich and look for my handsome face and just follow me on there. If you feel free to add me, send me a message. That would be a great way for us to connect. Yeah, for sure.
Got it. So go look him up on Facebook, Ron, Ronreich. So Ron Reich, Reich, Ronreich. Go take a look on Facebook. You can also go to ronreich.com, Ronreich. Ron, thank you for joining us today, knowing you've got your own following, your own community, your own family to take care of. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I so we can all do a little bit better.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.